Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Real quick, just want to thank the scouts, the college guys. They've done a heck of a job in an odd year to try and gather information, watch players. He couldn't be on the campus as much. It was more game only. And so a lot of digging and a lot of zooming and you know, all the world we're in, but they've done a heck of a job helping us get this board set. And then our coaches, the past month, once we got through free agency, have really jumped in head first and zoomed a lot of these guys to help us get to know them more, and either allowed us to jump on them or go back and watch some of them. And we're still kind of doing a little bit of that as we wrap up. So thanks to, you know, all those people and their hard work, and we're excited for where we're at.
Hey, Brandon, good to see you. Thanks for doing this today.
Thanks, Sal. Good seeing you, buddy.
I have a non-draft question, if I may, to start off with. You have the fifth year option coming up on May 3rd, the deadline for both Josh and Tremaine. Have you made any decisions on that? And, you know, any updates, I guess, you could give us on where you stand with those?
Yeah, short answer is we're going to wait till after the draft to figure that out. We've had some discussions, but really that'll be front and center as soon as the draft's done. The hard part this year is going to be the cap has gone down. Don't know exactly where it's going to be next year. Probably not a huge increase. You know, Josh's numbers in the 20s because of a Pro Bowl. Tremaine has made a couple Pro Bowls. He's pushing 13. So, you know, you can't really be flexible with those cap numbers. So we've got to make sure if we pick them both up, you know, that we're going to have close to $35 million space in next year's cap. So, it's not an ideal scenario from that to pick them both up and not extend them. So we just got to kind of figure out how we can make that work in our system. But we'll have that answer, you know, once the draft's over, Sal.
And how has re-signing Daryl, John, and Matt maybe opened the draft up for you guys, opened the board up? Or does it not really matter because you just kind of go about your business the same way, basically?
Yeah, I mean, it helps. You know, the goal is to try and fill as many spots as we can so that we're not going into this draft with a void somewhere. And, you know, if we hadn't been able to sign those guys and then didn't find, you know, if they left and we didn't find proper replacements, you know, it's not fun going into the draft going, man, we can't get out of day two without this player. It puts a lot of pressure on you. And sometimes now you're reaching a little bit, and it can happen because sometimes, you know, you lose a free agent and you're not able to find the right guy in free agency for whatever reason. So I've seen it happen, but, you know, very glad to get those guys back. And it does help open the board up to us not to have to select for need.
Thanks, Brandon.
You got it, Sal.
Hey, Brandon, good to see you. You mentioned the uniqueness of the evaluation over the past year plus. How do you feel your ability to have a firm grasp on who these guys are compares to in a traditional setting when you get more in-persons and whatnot?
Yeah, I mean, it's not as good, John. That's real. We've done a lot of things, and we've answered a lot of things that we would in person via Zoom. And sometimes it's, you know, you bring a guy in, you can spend a few hours with him. The Zooms are limited to one, and there's still that barrier of the Zoom. So some of these guys, we've said, you know what, I still don't know if I know player X. Let's get back on him, or let's put somebody else on talking to him, and maybe we just kind of stand aside and watch it or even watch it later, some of the ones that we've recorded. So it's been different. I think the hardest part is where we're at now. You know, we met with the doctors last night, and the medical is nowhere near where it usually is. Our doctors usually have a very good feeling on all the guys that go to Indy. The loops we're trying to close at this point our non-combine guys just trying to call their schools and get data. You know, this year, 140 guys ended up going to Indy, and some of those guys got out of there without images and things like that. So some of it's going on calling those schools, the people that are doing their due diligence on it, and just trying to put, you know, two and two together. But that's probably my biggest angst, is some unknown medical. You don't want to take a guy high and all of a sudden you bring him in here and you're going, man, I don't know how well this guy's going to stay on the field for us.
Thanks, Brandon.
You got it, John.
Hey, Brandon, hope you're doing well. Just have a question about the 30th pick overall, where you guys are at. How do you balance with what you will have at number 30 and where your draft board is, the issue, not the issue, but how do you balance drafting a guy who can start right away versus drafting a guy who's more of a developmental player, knowing where your team is at this year and knowing what you're trying to build for the future and the sustainability that you're trying to build in Buffalo?
Yeah, Maddie, good question. I mean, we, at the end of the day, at 30, we're going to try to take the best football player we could take. We really are. And, you know, you'd love to say, hey, this guy's going to come in and start right away day one. But it's going to depend on which position it is. I do think there are some positions, if it worked out that way, that maybe not definitely start, but you could say this guy's got a shot. I think there's some other guys that we have on the board. We're going, this guy's one heck of a player, but he's not going to start day one, but we will count on him. And maybe in a year, he's going to be the starter. We'll have a player that's on a, you know, the last year of their deal, and so he'll kind of back up that player, learn from him, compete with him, but we don't necessarily expect them to start. So we'll think long-term more than short-term, but you know, we'll see how it goes. It'll be a good player.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Maddie.
Hey, Brandon, Josh Reed here. Good to see you as always.
You outdressed me today.
I'm getting ready to head into work right now. The you know, with the way you've built this roster, you know, maybe just a lot of people from the outside looking in see maybe just one or two pieces away from making it to the Super Bowl, you know, the ultimate step. Sitting there at 30, is there maybe a little more thought of climbing up? I mean, you've, in the past, you've shown that you're not afraid to trade up or trade back, you know, knowing that maybe at 30, you don't get the guy who can come in right away and make the difference. Is there maybe leaning a little more, or maybe a little more thought to, we can jump up and get the guy that makes the difference?
Yeah. I mean, if there's a guy on our board that we go, man, I, you know, I'm just hypothetically, there's a guy, you know, 10 spots away at 20. And we're going, man, this guy is really fits us. He's everything we want. He's going to make a big impact now and long-term. You'd have to talk about it and of course see what it costs. And then obviously you'd have to have the team, you know, willing to make that move with you. So we won't be afraid to go up. We won't be afraid to pick at 30. And listen, if we get at 30 and we go, man, we think we can get a similar player going back and someone's fired up for the pick, then we'd listen to that too. So we're willing to go either way or definitely take that pick at 30.
Good luck next week. Appreciate your time, Brandon.
Thanks, John.
Brandon, John Worrell. I can safely say I've never outdressed anybody. So in respect to Josh Reed,
I like it.
3 years ago, you maneuvered your way up to get, you know, two picks in the top half of the draft. What are the inherent challenges that you now face and might face, hopefully you're hoping for the long term, of having to, you know, draft from the back of the pack?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good problem. I wish we were picking 32. That's the goal. But it is, because you're in theory, you're picking at the top of each, the next round. You know, we basically have, you know, we're three picks away from the top of the second round. So, you know, a lot of times when you're coming to the end of the round, we're either going to be picking at the very bottom of one, or we're going to be picking out of the second round, just depending on how it falls. And same thing at two, we may be picking out of the top of the third round. We stack the board the way we see it. We don't worry about where we're picking. And some rounds we've got a decent amount of players. Some rounds we may have 15 players. And so it may work where you're going down. And that's the scenario where if you only got 15 players in a round, the odds of you getting a guy, you know, at the 30th, or if there's comp picks involved, you're talking even later than that. That's where the scenario, you're either going up or you're trying to go back to get the value for the pick.
Just to follow up, is it a mental, a conscious readjustment of philosophy that you have to take now in this scenario?
Not really. It's really just set your board and trust it, and let the board tell you what to do. And that's where it is. If we get to pick 30 and we've got nobody at the bottom of one, you know, on our board, and it's in two, and maybe it's at the top of two, you're like, hey, that's close enough, we'll take it. But if the highest player would be way down in two, that's where we're going, man, we need to move back. Or, you know, the scenario earlier, we need to get up before our board gets cleaned out.
Fair enough. Thanks, Brandon.
You got it, John.
Hey, Brandon.
What's up, Vic?
How you doing, man?
Good. You, buddy?
Real good. Thank you. Brandon, it kind of relates to what you just answered with John's question. What are the inherent challenges of day two selection? I guess regardless of where you pick on day one, or even if you don't have a day one pick, what are the inherent challenges there? Knowing, first of all, it's still a premium area, and obviously there are flaws, perceived or real, enough to push these players on your board into that area. And has the maneuvering you've done on day two, for the most part, except for, I guess, last year, reflected the challenges that making sure you're getting, you know, the right value on with picks two or three?
Yeah, I mean, those are, you said it, those are still premium picks. It's probably a more exciting day than day one in a lot of, you know, a lot of respects, because you're still hoping to get, you know, two players that maybe they're starters, maybe they're not, but you're hoping they're contribute, you know, vital contributors, if not immediately through their career, you know, depending on who they're backing up and what position it is. So it's very important for us to hit on those. We try to be, try not to take crazy risks in those rounds. Maybe take more of your risk later, you know, on a height, weight, speed guy, or this guy's been a lower school player and you feel like his best football is ahead of him once you get him here, things like that. But no, it's an important round. Friday's is a very fun draft day. That's what's cool after round one, is seeing what's been taken off the board and looking, you know, at what's there as you enter Friday's round. And are you going to want to early, you know, start calling, and do we want to start moving up? Is our board starting to get cleaned out, or are we going, man, there's a lot of guys here, we can really be patient, get a guy, or even move back and pick up, you know, a later pick? You know, we don't have a four this year. So would it make sense to, if there's a lot of guys in the second round that we would be happy with, to, if someone wanted to come up, go back and we pick up a fourth or an extra five? So again, you know, a lot will be determined after each round, but those will be exciting rounds. I think we should be able to get some good players in two and three this year.
And quick follow, you said exciting, you said, I think, fun, but is it fair to say it's tougher because of that nature of it's, you know, you still know these aren't the take a chance picks. Like you said, they're very important and premium. Is it tougher to get it right there, I guess, is where I'm going with day two.
Yeah. I mean, I think every round you go down, it gets harder. It definitely does, because early in the draft, you're trying to decide, you know, you're looking at this player and all the great things he can do for you, but you do have to ask yourself, what would cause this player to fail? Like what scenario in our facility would cause him to fail? And if you come away and it's other than an injury or something like that, that no one can control, then you feel really confident. And as you go down the draft board, it's, all right, this guy's not as high as some of these other guys, but what trait or traits is he going to overcome? What does he have? Maybe it's intangibles. Like this guy, he's not a height, weight, speed guy, but he's smart. He studies. He's the first guy in the building, and he's going to find a way. And we see those guys all the time that are undrafted players. Levi Wallace is a great example of a guy who doesn't have all the great traits that first rounders have, but he's got elite intangibles, want to, instincts. And when you add that up, he's going to play in this league for a number of years. And it's guys like that that you try and find in the later rounds. We were fortunate to get him as a free agent.
Thank you, Brandon.
You got it.
Hey, Brandon, it's Jay with the Buffalo News. I hope you're doing well. Maddie touched on this earlier with her question about the idea of the sustainability of success that you guys have had. But you've got Josh, who we all believe is going to be in a different stratosphere with his contract here at some point. Does that knowledge impact how you approach this draft? Because that's going to have a trickle-down effect on you, really, how you build your entire roster when you have to pay your quarterback. Do you have to look at certain positions or players and say, we don't know if we're going to be able to afford this guy? Does that impact your draft planning?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely does. We do have to look at what's coming down the pipe as far as guys that are going to be free agents next year, or are there players that are going to have a high cap number that we may have to make a tough decision on, depending on where the cap goes. I mean, there's less uncertainty than there was a year ago, but there's still a lot of uncertainty. You know, are we definitely going to have full stadiums? Or, you know, which impacts the revenue, which impacts the cap? Just all those things will be part of the process. But the cap is probably not going to go up a lot next year. I think it will increase from this year, but I don't think there's going to be a giant increase. So I think a lot of teams, including us, are still going to have some tough decisions going forward. So we've got to be smart with these picks, finding as many guys, cheap labor, if you want to call it. I use that term loosely because, you know, player salaries aren't cheap, but in comparison to what you would be paying a franchise quarterback or what we're paying Tre'Davious and Steph and all those guys, we've got to find some guys on the lower end because you still got to field a team and you got to find enough guys to line up and start for you.
And in turn, does that maybe impact how you would view potentially moving up as opposed to down, given that going up sometimes sacrifices those draft picks? You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's definitely something we would have to weigh as far as, okay, if we're moving up, how far is it? You know, for moving four slots is probably not going to kill us. If we said, hey, we want to go to number 10, you're spot on. That's probably going to really cost us. And so if we were to do something like that, how are we going to make up for it? Where are we going to, you know, account for these picks that we lost, which are four-year deals that, you know, at a controlled cost. So that's definitely something we'd have to weigh as far. And each round you go down, it's less expensive to move up. So maybe in round one we don't do it, or definitely not be hard to take that kind of move, to your point. But maybe in some of the mid to later rounds, it makes more sense. You're not having to give up as much, especially if you're looking at your board and you're going, all right, let's look at the sixth round. How many of these guys, based on what we've already taken and what we know, have a legit shot to make the 53?
Thanks, Brandon. Appreciate your time.
You got it.
Hey, Brandon. Good to see you. You were on a podcast recently with Steve Weiss, Jim Trotter, and you had a great example of, you know, going back to your Carolina days of drafting Thomas Davis to deal with Michael Vick. And I'm curious, after getting two looks at Patrick Mahomes this year, this entire offseason to break down those two games and Kansas City and all that, have you guys kind of arrived at what it is specifically that you need, not position wise, but maybe, like, you know, in terms of a player or skill set to kind of position yourselves better in those matchups next year?
Yeah. I mean, maybe if we get a 12th defender on the field, that would help. But no, I mean, he's an MVP. He's elite. He's been, you know, 3 years in a row. He's, you know, twice he's been in the Super Bowl and once the AFC Championship. So he's up there for a reason. And when you're facing guys, there's very few guys, I mean, that have already what he's done, accomplished what he's already done, you know, in three seasons playing. And so it's going to be a tough match no matter when we play him, where we play him, how we play him. And you just got to try and, you know, on the defensive side, build as many weapons as you can, whether that's in the secondary, whether that's speed linebackers to chase them down, obviously the front. I mean, you saw what Tampa did. You know, their front really did a nice job versus Kansas City's front, which affected him and got him off his spot. But you can see, even with Mahomes, how good he is, some of the throws he made, even when they got him off the spot, the play's not dead. So it's getting him, you know, flushed out, but then still having speed. And can your secondary hold up long enough? And you know, they've done a great job with their team speed, you know, at the receiver position. Obviously, Kelce is, you know, one of the best tight ends, if not the best in the league. So a lot of weapons that he has, and he does a great job of either hitting them immediately or if the pressure gets there, extending. So it's a tough assignment for any defense. And, you know, and for Leslie, I know he's watched a lot of film and Sean probably too, of how teams have played him, who's had success, how they've had success. And so we'll continue to try and add, you know, as many defensive players that can help stop him, but it's never going to be easy. In 5 years from now, hopefully I'm still sitting here, but you're probably going to still be asking me how we're going to stop Mahomes and hopefully not too many other guys like him.
And if I can briefly follow up, you mentioned the line. What's been your impressions, without getting into a certain player, of the defensive line crop in this draft this year?
Yeah, I do think there's some guys. You know, I don't think there's – you won't see as many guys maybe at the top of the draft. You know, some of the guys that, you know, Washington took last year or San Francisco the year before. But there is depth at the position, just probably not as many – you know, those guys you're going, hey, this guy's going to be the first non-quarterback pass rusher taken. You know, I don't think this is the year for that.
Thanks, Brandon.
You got it. Good seeing you, man.
Hey, Brandon, thanks for doing this. Appreciate the time as always. I want to ask about the opt-out guys and how that decision might change how you evaluate that, not from the point of view of evaluating or making a value judgment of the decision, but that all these guys now have film that's at minimum 500 days old.
Yeah, that's hard. And, we even ran into some guys that had injuries early in the 19 season. And so we're watching 18 tape. We're watching them go against guys that are playing in the league right now for a couple of years. I mean, it's weird. You're going, well, this kid was a freshman then or a sophomore or whatever. And so very unique to go back that far. Unless you're watching a quarterback, you're rarely going back, you know, a few seasons. You're usually watching this season and maybe the year before, but just to see how they've progressed. Are they trending? So it's been very hard. You know, a lot of guys even started the season, but then for whatever reason, their team wasn't doing well. Maybe they had an injury or maybe an agent got to them and said, hey, you know, why risk it? Your team's not playing for the championship. And so it was a lot of that. You know, some guys played 3 games, 5, some played 0. A very unique year. Part of kind of what I was – the opening question, you know, was not only is it hard to get to know these players, you know how much we put into the stock of who they are as people and what their work habits are going to be and their competitiveness and all those things. We're still figuring that out. We have a pretty good feel. But the play, you're definitely having to project a little bit on a guy that you saw him play a lot in 18, very little in 19. You know, how much is that weigh? Maybe you're going, this guy probably has second round talent, but man, I don't know. That's a lot of time away. Some guys did play in the Senior Bowl that had that helped, but there were some guys that their agents, you know, recommended they didn't play in the Senior Bowl and that doesn't help. So it's just a matter of how comfortable are we with the last film we've seen on.
Great, Brandon. Thanks. Good luck next week.
Thanks, Dad.
Hey, Brandon, thank you for taking the time. Over the last 3 years, there's been an average of 4 trades between pick 20 and 32. How much are you expecting your phone to ring with teams interested in pick 30? And how does the fifth-year option play a big role in teams moving back up into the first round?
Yeah, I think you see that a lot where if there's a premium player, whether it's a quarterback or, you know, a left tackle, a pass rusher, you know, one of those premium positions, if there's a player on the board that a team, you know, high up in 2 covets, that's where you see it a lot. I know Baltimore did that. They took Hayden Hurst and then a few years back and then traded up to pick 32 because it gives them that fifth year option on the player, which is a controlled cost. So that's usually the scenarios where you'll see teams, you know, in the top half of 2 go up into 1, you know, and it's, it's exciting if you're in that role sometimes, because you got a premium player maybe in the top 10 of round one, and you're going, man, we had a first round grade on this player. Let's go get two first rounders out of here, out of this draft. We'll trade up into the bottom of the round. So I would be surprised if we don't get some calls for 30. We'll just have to make a judgment of how we see the board and if we'd be willing to give it up.
Definitely. Thank you.
You got it.
Hey, Brandon, how are you?
What's up, Joe?
Not too much. I just wanted to go a little bit off of what Matt Parrino was talking about Mahomes and the difficulties that he presents. I mean, he is kind of the poster boy of this new breed of NFL quarterback that they really do their biggest damage out of structure. I'm just wondering, and you see a lot of the guys coming into this year have a lot of the same traits. I'm just wondering, how does that impact how you evaluate the defensive end position? And if it makes you perhaps look for things a little bit different than you would have, let's say, maybe even 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I don't know if it changes a lot. I mean, you're always looking for guys who are explosive off the ball. You know, you'd love to have the prototype size, length, you know, to long arm these tackles, you know, an array of pass, you know, rush moves or the instincts. Now, some guys, you see all the physical tools, but maybe they haven't been coached. You're going, hey, we get them in our system, we can get that fixed. You know, they have one move in college, and you know, the offensive tackle stalls them, and they don't know how to counter out of it. Some of those things can be taught, but you're trying to grade the fit. You know, the physical tools. What is their speed? What's their explosiveness? You know, can they change direction? Can they redirect? They're rushing, you know, hard to their left, and all of a sudden the ball goes out to their right. How quickly can they redirect and get out there to at least force a throw? Maybe they don't make the sack, but force the guy to throw it or get him down before it becomes, you know, a wide open loose play, you know, behind him. So I don't know that it's changed a lot. I mean, you know, you go back to Carolina one year, we drafted Julius Peppers, you know, number one overall. Like, you can't find guys like that, you know. So when those guys come available, they're whatever year you'll take them. And so you're always looking for that. But I don't know that it's changed, you know, a lot, to be honest with you, Joe.
Yeah, that's fair. I was just wondering, because of the contain principles for a lot of these guys that get outside the pocket, and where they kind of shift the zone over and then you throw it over the top of them.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that has changed since then, I would say instincts are very important. Of everybody does, you know, even, you know, Dable does a lot of the stuff behind the line, you know, the Isaiah McKenzie moving, where's the ball at? So guys that are able to get off the ball and not lose it and still be able to attack the passer. You know, offensive game has changed a lot, where there's a lot of smoke and mirrors back there. The guys that instinctually have that feel will help them get an extra step that maybe they don't have athletically, they can make up for it.
Cool. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, Brandon, hope you're doing well. Thanks for doing this today. You know, you mentioned that it's still a unique season, but does it feel like there is more clarity, albeit there are different questions going into this year? Last year, we didn't know how many games are going to be played, what the rollout was going to look like. Now, I guess the questions are there stadiums going to be full, like you mentioned? Are there going to be vaccinations that are made mandatory? I guess, how do you balance still having these questions, but also still understanding you're in a better spot now than the league was last year?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the whole country's in a better spot. Obviously, we're not past it, but I do think that this league showed they could do a training camp, 256 games plus a full playoffs, that it should be better. And, you know, hopefully, you know, as the country continues to get vaccinated, hopefully all stadiums will be full. If not, hopefully close to full. I think that will make the environment what we're all used to, what we all enjoy. So I think we're in a much better spot. We're excited about where it's at. Still a lot of unknowns. You know, our focus really is just here is to control what we can control, which is try to get better. Our players, you know, started the offseason program, and then us here trying to get better with this draft coming up next week.
Cool. Thanks, Brandon.
Thanks, Matt.
Hey, Brandon, how you doing, man?
What's up? How you doing, Marcel?
Can't complain a bit. But, you know, you've spoken a little bit about trading down. I'm curious if, in your mind, there's an inherent value in having – in keeping that first-round pick instead of acquiring more capital, or is there an option that you prefer over the other?
No, it's really not. I think either way is good. It's doing what's best for you. If I could tell you this, if there's a good player there, we're not trading down because there's no guarantee. You know, you trade down 6-7 spots, there's no guarantee that player is still going to be there if you've got quite a wide gap in your board of who the next player would be. So now the inverse of that is if our first round's completely wiped out of players and maybe the top of the two is wiped out also, then you're really trying to trade back to maximize your value. Doesn't mean you'll be able to do it, but that's when you would consider doing that. You know, the nice thing about the first round pick is you have that fifth year option. You know, it's that extra year to protect you, gives you some time to get the player extended. But at the end of the day, if we'll just do kind of what makes sense and how the board falls, you know, each pick, we're so far down there, there's going to be a lot of unknowns, especially once the quarterbacks go.
Yeah, that was actually going to be a sidebar question was, is there a scenario in which you want to use that first round pick specifically to activate the fifth year option, or is it, you know, not worth picking a player that you're not necessarily comfortable with in that range?
Yeah, I think I would definitely take this pick if there's a guy that we're excited about and we've got a good, you know, a solid first round grade on. You know, that's where I would be less likely to move back, unless there's just a lot of guys still floating around at the bottom of one or the top of two on my board where I go, hey, I can go back 7 or 8 spots and still get one of these other guys plus acquire, you know, whatever, an extra third or an extra fourth, whatever, how far the move would be. So we're very comfortable staying at 30 and getting that fifth year option. But again, we'll just kind of listen to the board and see what happens.
Got it. Appreciate you, Brandon.
You got it, Marcel.
Sorry there, Brandon.
What's up, Sal? How you doing?
Same old, same old. I was going to ask you about running backs. You guys have spent a third round pick the last 2 years, and there's been a little bit of speculation in the draft community about you guys might think about that at number 30. Do you think you guys have spent maybe enough draft capital, at least that high in a round on that particular position?
I don't worry about that too much. I mean, we feel very comfortable with the guys we have. So I'm not going into this draft, Sal, going, man, we've got to find us a back here in the top few rounds or anything like that. But there are some good players in here, and if he's the best guy on our board, we wouldn't hesitate to take him. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking about, you know, people talk about first-round running backs. You shouldn't do it. But at number 30, maybe it's worth taking the swing. But, again, what I was saying was, you've already spent 2 third-round picks at that position. So is it too much at that particular position? That was what I was getting at.
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to – what does his skill set have in comparison to what we have on the roster? Is this player going to do something – you know, I don't think either one of our backs are home run hitters. Is there an elite trait that this guy has that says, man, he's got something we don't have? That's probably the conversation versus – okay, are we going to take the same type of back as Devin, or are we going to take the same type of back as Zach? Because even those two guys have different skill sets. So I think those are the conversations you have. What does this player bring to you that you don't already have on the roster that you're going, man, if we add that to the group, that's going to help our overall offense.
Okay. Thanks, Brandon.
You got it.
Hey, Brandon. Appreciate you taking the time. You've mentioned a few of the weird parts about this draft, like, you know, the scouting, you know, and the opt-outs. I'm curious, I saw that there were significantly fewer players in the draft compared to the last 2 years. How have you seen that impact the class, and has it helped you, I don't know, get a better feel for the players that are in the draft?
Yeah, I mean, I think the draft, there's still a good amount of players, you know, in the top 7 rounds, similar to most years. I think it gets thin after that. You know, a lot of these players that got told by either agents or their coaches or whatever that, hey, I don't know if you're going to get drafted. I think a lot of those guys took that extra free year that the NCAA is allowing. So I think, you know, you're talking 6th, 7th and priority free agents, it does get pretty thin, because a lot of those guys went back instead of being forced to come out. So, but overall, it's, it's pretty similar as far as the number of guys on our board this year to what we've had in years past.
And how has the off-season program started for you guys in terms of player attendance and participation? I know that's been kind of an issue around the league where some players don't want to come back to the facility. What's been the communication so far for you guys on that front?
Yeah, our guys, they're still working through, you know, who's going to come in and when. And we do have some participation. Obviously, it's not like most years. And but, you know, Sean and I have been in communication with them, with at least the captains, the leaders. And they've done a great job of communicating with the group and then kind of communicating back to us where their comfort level is on things. And so that's all we can ask. Sean and I are very appreciative. These guys have done a great job of communicating with the group and then letting us know and also allowing us to give them some insight into our thoughts on things. And that's what you want, two-way communication. And we'll continue to do that as we navigate the next 9 weeks.
Thanks, Brandon.
You got it.
Hey, Brandon, good to see you. I just wanted to – I know you addressed the fifth-year option with Josh and Tremaine off the top, but I think it's kind of worth a follow given some of the things you had indicated prior. So I guess my question on that is, I know you were going to talk as far as contract went after the draft into May with Josh. Is that still on schedule? And how would you weigh the chance of maybe doing something next year? As I think you had indicated that on a podcast. Is everything still on schedule as far as Josh is concerned in that long-term deal?
Yeah, Josh and I have spoken, and I've also had one conversation with one of his representatives that we're just going to get through the draft. And then when we get to later spring, maybe summer, there's no rush, but we'll have some kind of conversation. And listen, we would love to get Josh extended, no doubt, but it's got to be a number that works for him and works for us. And that's been my conversation with them, and they know the same, and we're all on the same page. Josh wants to be here, which that's the first thing. Does the player want to be here? Josh wants to be here. That gives me hope that we'll get something done at some point. I can't guarantee it'll be this year. The good thing is we do have time. And I think I did say on that podcast, we tried in Carolina to get Cam Newton done at this time. And it didn't work. We weren't on the same page with his agent on where the value is, where they saw it. And so we just said, hey, no hard feelings. We're all on the same page here. And we just pushed pause. He played that season. And then after that season, we got it done pretty quick. That next off season, we were more on the same page. So I guess what I'm saying is you can't force it. It happens when it's supposed to happen. And if it happens, this year, great. If it doesn't, I'll be very positive that we'll get it done next year.
Thanks. And just a quick follow, if I could, to Matt's question that he had asked just prior. I know that the player vaccination, a lot of this is out of your control, obviously. It involves negotiations with the PA and all that. But how much, from an organizational standpoint, the whole player vaccination issue and whether or not, I mean, Josh had kind of spoken to that as well. How much of a concern is that for you moving forward into this season?
Yeah, I think, what Josh said was, he still needed more education. I think a lot of the young people they're so far down the line that they're just like, I'm not in line right now anyway, unless you have a condition. And now all of a sudden recently players, the age of our players, they now have that choice. And so these guys are starting to research. I know the NFLPA will be feeding them information. The league has sent us information that we can share with them. Questions, concerns, like everyone has about a new vaccine. So we will, make sure we share that with our players this spring and, the pros and cons. And again, it's a personal choice. It's not going to be anything that I'm aware of that would be mandated by them to do, but we'll obviously give them that education and they'll make the best decision for them.
Thank you, Brandon.
You got it.
Yes, good afternoon, Brandon. George Radney, Challenger Community News. How you doing this afternoon?
Good, George. How you doing?
Pretty good. That's good. Hate that snow's still coming, but man, it seemed like last time I talked to you, snow was in the forecast. But we just don't get away from it up here in Western New York.
Now, a little April curveball for us here.
Absolutely. And my question is, with the offseason program, And the way that the NFL Players Association is talking now, do you most general managers throughout the league, when you guys have your meetings, do you see down the road that it might turn into virtual each year? And then you just maybe the free agents guys who are up for free agency, they're the only ones that may be able to come into the different stadiums and so forth for physicals and so forth. When you're looking at guys for free agency, do you think this might be a thing of the future? Because the way the union's talking, it sounds like they want to make it go back to the way it used to be, where the veteran players don't have to come in until May or June.
Yeah. You know, I'd be surprised if it was, I'm not saying something wouldn't be altered, but you know, last year's CBA that was agreed upon, you know, that was part of the deal, the off-season program and the phase one, phase two, phase three. So barring, you know, the union probably giving them something back, I doubt you see it go away. Again, that's handled, you know, at a much higher level than I am. But, you know, I know the players are pushing for some of that, but I think that would probably be a conversation more for the next CBA more than in this one.
Okay, and last question for you. With Josh Allen's deal, you wouldn't have to come to an agreement on the deal until his fifth year, correct? And it wouldn't go it wouldn't cost your team a salary cap hit or anything until what, his sixth season? Is that how that works? Where if you sign him now to a new
extension, it depends on how we wrote it. So if we did a contract now, you know, it would just be how we structured it. We could structure it to where it's probably going to cost us a little bit on our cap, but there's a lot of different ways we could structure it to where it doesn't, you know, greatly affect it. That'll be part of the negotiation, is as much as the money, what's the structure? Because again, you know, we've got to not only fit him in this year, but next year's cap is not going to increase a lot. So can we agree to what his numbers would be this year and then year two and then beyond? And some of that's an unknown, you know, where the cap's going to be years three and beyond. So we'll have to do our calculations of where we see the cap going. I'm sure his representatives will do the same. And that's where you got to make sure if you're on the same page on that, it helps you get it done quicker. Sometimes you're feeling like the cap's going to go up 8% and they're hearing that it's going up 15%. Well, that's a big difference, and they're pressing for more dollars, and you're worried, well, if I do that, I'm not going to be able to sign any other players. I may even have to cut players. So that will all be part of the negotiation, along with the money will be the structure and how it's paid out.
All right. Thank you very much. And good luck in next week's draft.
Thanks. Nice seeing you, George.
Okay, Brandon, thanks for doing this. Last year, there were two obvious big nickel candidates in Duggar and Shin with obvious physical traits. How would you characterize the depth of candidates for a big nickel position? Obviously, there's a lot more smaller linebackers, but is the pool, how would you characterize? Is there a lot, a little? Is it really hard, just a limited number of guys who really could start in that role? What do you think of that spot?
Yeah, it's a hard spot because there's a lot of mental that goes into that big nickel position, especially if they have another primary position. I mean, we don't go into the draft going, hey, we don't have a column that says big nickel. You know what I mean? We got linebacker. You know, most of those position comes out of linebackers or safeties that you're going to fill that big nickel role. But it's just a part of the defense. It's not something that we're going, hey, let's go through our six big nickels here like we would our outside linebackers or our safeties. So there are some guys at each position that you could say, hey, this guy has, you know, the size, the speed, and we believe the smarts to handle position A as a linebacker or position A as a safety, and also handle the volume of the big nickel. But it's, you know, I think – a lot was put into that last year more than was reality of us looking for this, you know, this unicorn of a big nickel out there. You know, it's one of those, if you have the player on there, the coaches will use it, but it's not something that we got to have for this defense, I guess is the best way to say it.
Great. And then real quickly, Tommy Sweeney, is he physically going to be good to go?
Yes, he's trending. He's passed his cardiologist visit. So he's here, he's working out, he's doing his thing. And I think he still has a couple of follow-up visits, but hopefully those will go well. We anticipate having him this year full go.
All right.
Thanks.
Brandon Bean, a.k.a. The Burglar around this time. Mookie Hawkins, Buffalo Sports 1080. How's it going, sir?
What's up, Mookie? Appreciate the intro, man. I got to get you all the time, man.
Yeah, last year around this time, we spoke about getting those impact players in those meat and potato rounds, those fourth, fifth, and sixth rounds. Last year, you did an awesome job with Gabe and Fromm and Bass and Hodgkins. Without having that fourth round pick to start the meat and potato rounds, how much strain is that putting on your draft board right now?
Well, you know, I wish I had it, but I like what I got for giving it up. So I have to remember that. The other part of it is we do have the extra fifth. So if the one thing we could do is, listen, if there's a guy in four that we're really excited about, we could use that extra fifth and move up. So it's just how you do it. Like I said earlier, who knows? Maybe there's a scenario where somebody wants to come up and around and we don't want that pick. We'd rather move back and we pick up a fourth or even an extra five, which you use 1-5 to get into the fourth and then you still got a five. So we'll see how the draft plays, but I'm not too worried about it.
Yes, sir. And I had the great opportunity to speak with all these college prospects once again. And I get a different vibe now once I mentioned, you know, have the Bills been in contact with you. Now, you have the opportunity to speak with these college prospects as well. Has there been a, you know, kind of like a different vibe from last year to this year with the success you had in all season with these college prospects?
Yeah, I think the guys are, you know, we were on national TV more. So people kind of know. I don't even think some of these players knew where Buffalo was before. So we're, I think we're moving in the right direction. But no, it's been good. A lot of great young men that we, you know, unfortunately we hadn't got to bring them to Buffalo like we used to with the 30 visits and things like that. But I think whoever we get will be excited to join our team.